You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is the 27th of February 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Subal. Subal, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm a bit upset that I'm missing the rugby, but apart from that, I'm fine.
You're a bit of a fan of rugby, are you?
No, not really. Actually, I've never really been a person to watch sports, but I watched a couple of the games in the last few weeks, and it's much more enjoyable than football because it's much more violent and there's a lot more action. It's also a lot whiter, to be honest. The crowd looks a lot whiter and the players look a lot whiter. It looks like much more of a white middle class kind of game. And you know what they say? They say that, football is a game for gentlemen played by thugs and rugby is a game for thugs played by gentlemen. So yeah, I quite like rugby. But anyway, these are one of the sacrifices I have to make for the cause.
Yeah, I know. It seems a lot more refined, I think, rugby is. And yeah. The people that are involved in it seem a lot more refined. But you were talking there about the audience and most of it being white and white people that support it. This is one of the things that struck me just recently. Obviously, we've got to start the show with a bit of Trump news. And I was watching him at the CPAC convention the other day. And it was all white audience. And, you know, I must admit, it really impressed me to hear all these people shouting, USA, USA. I mean, it really made my heart sore to hear this patriotism. And I was thinking, can you imagine anyone in Britain chanting Britannia, Britannia at Theresa May or at any of our prime ministers? It's just something I just could not imagine. And even though it's not ethno-nationalism over there in America and Trump is not a white nationalist, just the fact that he is a civic nationalist and just the fact that he has lit this spark of patriotism in America is just so impressive, and it's so heartwarming and so encouraging to see. And this is before you even get into the subjects that he was talking about. He was talking about the fake news, banning the BBC. I'm so impressed with that.
Did he ban the BBC?
Yeah, he's banned the BBC. They said they're fake news. And they had the cheek to ask him, you know, why have you banned us? Why have you banned us? And I watch occasionally a bit of the BBC, and their anti-Trumpness, it goes right the way through the whole channel. They've got it on soap operas, they've got it in comedy shows, they've obviously got it in the news all the time. And yet he wonders why the BBC wonder why he would be wanting to ban them. And it's terrible. And just talking about soap operas, there's some of the stuff they've been putting in there. Just recently, we've had a white man crash a bus into a market, just to remind people there's not only Muslims that run over shoppers, it's also white people. What else have we had?
Yes, those evil white terrorists.
Yeah, we've had poles out painted on a door just because, of course, we're going through immense hatred against poles at the moment. Never mind the fact that the chief of police actually said it was only 5 or 6 hate tweets that were sent out that could be directly attributed to Brexit. The narrative they want to push is that there are all these violent hate crimes against poles. So we've had that there. And plus, we've now got the equivalent of the magic nigger. We have the magic pole. We have this pole on the BBC soap opera who saves the day in just about every episode. He's a plumber, he's a builder, he's a chef, he's absolutely amazing. This wonder pole that they have. This is all social engineering, trying to change the way people think, trying to back up the nonsense that they put on the news, basically, by putting it in these soap operas. So it's not only fake news, but the fake news is actually reflected in these fake soap operas as well. It's just interesting to see that the anti-Trumpness has even made its way into that. Did you catch any of his CPAC speech, Subal?
Yeah, so I saw a little bit of the CPAC. I saw the speech. It was very high energy, and the crowd was absolutely loving it, and they were singing and chanting USA, USA. A couple of people in the crowd were shouting out "Lock her up" when they were talking about Hillary Clinton, which is good to see. Obviously, Trump, he's fighting a war with the deep state right now. But things in that respect, things seem to be heating up as well. Because there's one YouTube channel, I think it's called Veritas. He's talking, he said that 1,500 sex offenders or child traffickers have been arrested in the last few weeks. 1,500, which is an unprecedented amount. So it seems like this guy was actually saying that he's got a CIA, not a CIA, an FBI contact or some contact in the deep state, I don't know. But the guy was basically saying that what they're doing is they're taking like a bottom-up approach. So they're cracking down on the small players in the child sex ring, and then they're going to get them to confess, and then they're going to go for the big ones. So hopefully that's going to push forward in a few months' time, and he'll tear the whole thing to pieces. But yeah, it's just really good to watch Trump. He looks very calm and very relaxed. And I got to say, it's a real pleasure just to be able to directly connect to the leader, if you know what I mean. Because I think the CPAC video, or the one that I watched anyway, it had White House News on the corner of it. So he's basically got his own news channel now. It's just, he goes directly to YouTube, you know. I don't know, it was nice. It was like, that's our leader. And he cares about us, and he's looking after us, and he looks calm. He looks in control. Because I was a little bit nervous like a week ago, think with all the, you know, the Jews blocking him, the courts blocking him. I was thinking, oh, looks a bit dodgy. But he just looks relaxed. He looks like he's having a great time. You know, he's a very charismatic person. I mean, the guy is just full of charisma, and he just walks on the stage and he fills the room. I mean, he's basically a king. So yeah, I love him. I love him. I love watching him. I love the vibe. I love pouring a beer and sitting and drinking a beer and watching Donald Trump talk. It's fantastic.
He is. He's like a performer, isn't he? And
he's great.
I do. I appreciate the contact that he has with us. It does feel as if you have much more of a direct line to him when you're reading his tweets, when he's sending out tweets to communicate directly with the people. And I think he made a good point that he's spoken out against the fake news, and we need to have a war against the fake news. And the media reported that as he wants to have a war against the media. Well, no, he wants to go against this fake news that's being put out. And when you watch the BBC and what have you, they keep talking about how Donald Trump only got in because of fake news. It was all fake news that helped him. But it was all these fake polls that the BBC and CNN were using. That's the fake news that he's talking about, how far out these polls were and how far off the mark the presenters were. And the CNN, obviously, they've been banned as well. That they've been accused of being fake news. The Clinton News Network, and Hillary Clinton should be locked up. I mean, that was something that he said he was going to do. I would like to see her investigated. But isn't CNN owned by a Jew or something, you were telling me before we went on air as well?
Yeah, I can't remember his exact name, but I mean, David Duke did a video about it. It's one of his. Well, it's one of the first videos that really red-pilled me 2 years ago when I discovered Duke's channel. He talks about the connection between CNN and Goldman Sachs and, you know, just how that you have this triangle of power between finance and media and the political realm. It's got a really good video on it. But yeah, he's owned by an Israeli Jew, very secretive And I can't remember the guy's name, but it's basically Israeli news. And I think we need to push this on the alt-right. We need to get that guy's name out there and into the, you know, try and push it into the mainstream, because this is what Trump's talking about. Trump is basically fighting a war with CNN. So we need to start putting that guy's name out there.
And pointing out the reasons why this needs to be done.
Also, just to point out the hypocrisy. I've seen Trump do this a couple of times, actually. He said, well, Israeli's got a war. You know, he's pulled it out. I mean, he knows what's going on. He knows the hypocrisy. He's not a white nationalist, but he sees the hypocrisy. So there is, you could point this narrative directly. You know, if he keeps pushing the way he is, sooner or later, he can point out, or other people can start pointing out, CNN is owned by an Israeli. It's an Israeli, CNN is a sub, company of Warner Brothers, I think, as far as I understand. But CNN is owned by an Israeli. And Israel has a wall. And, you know, and it's utter hypocrisy. And once you start pointing that out, you're basically addressing the JQ, without actually addressing the JQ. You know, you're addressing the Israeli issue, you know, which is just, you know, half a step away from addressing the Jewish question.
Well, he brought up his wall as well, didn't he? I mean, he said that, they've started work on it. And that's going to be pretty immediate, and they will have the wall, much as they keep trying to mock him for that. It's needed. It's needed as a symbol to the American people that something's been done about the immigration, as a symbol that America does have borders. It is a separate nation to the rest of the world, and to function to keep out the people that you don't want there. It's a hugely positive symbol for the American people, I think, to see that and to have him actually doing that. He's also not going to be attending the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which is another good thing. He's saying that he doesn't want anything to do with the fake news, so he's not going to go to their Correspondents' Dinner, which is just all full of the fake news journalists. I am impressed with his White House spokesman, Sean Spicer, I think his name is. Every time I've seen him, he's done a really good job of explaining what the president is doing and what the president means by what he's saying. He's a very, very good spokesman, much better than the ones that Obama had. They were just really sleazy and slimy and horrible. You could watch them being questioned on Russia Today. And they're just really, really bad people. I mean, I'm impressed with Trump's team. I'm impressed with everything that he's done so far. And it is great that he's going out there and talking to the people. And again, the audience was all white. That was the best thing. The audience was all white, and they were all cheering for their country, all cheering for their homeland. And I long for the day when we'll actually see that in Britain. And I was thinking, USA, USA, it's such a good chant. What could we do over here? I was thinking, you've got UK. You couldn't say UK. You could say England. Yeah. But then the Scots and the Welsh wouldn't like it. And I was thinking, no, we've got Britannia. Britannia.
Oh, Britannia.
Just Britannia.
Britannia.
Yeah. Britannia. So it's a great name for a country, I think. Anyway, perhaps we should.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, on our side of the pond, I've got to say something, but Theresa May, I did see her sitting in the House of Lords and watching the Lords. And I saw her sitting there, and you know, I'm not trying to defend her. She is a career politician. She should have signed Article 50 straight away, and we wouldn't have had the mess that we're in now. But still, she kind of went beyond I was happy to see her, because as you probably, you know, as all the audience knows, the bill has gone through the Commons. Now it's in the House of Lords. The House of Lords is thinking about blocking it. I'm not exactly sure whether they're going to try and block it or not. But Theresa May went beyond the call of duty, and she sat in the House of Lords as a spectator to watch the debate, which I thought was nice. So I think she's doing an okay job. And like I said before, she definitely is a career politician, but she serves who is in power. And now Trump is in power. So maybe she's thinking, well, maybe I don't want to have to listen to Israel anymore. maybe I'll listen to Donald Trump. So things are looking good.
Yeah, I think she's holding her cards close to her chest, isn't she? If we see Le Pen get in, and also Geert Wilders in Holland, then I think we might very well see her moving further, much further towards the right. If that doesn't happen, do you see what I mean? She's holding her cards close to her chest. She's waiting to see what else is going to happen in Europe before really making any moves, I think.
Oh, yeah, she's a really good politician. I mean, she's not saying anything about anything. She didn't even come out on the Brexit issue. She was like, oh, well, maybe in, maybe out. You know, yeah, she's... No, she's not an ideological politician. She's a career politician. But yeah, I have to say, while we're talking about Britain, I have to say, Paul Nuttall, what a disappointment. Didn't win the by-election.
And, very disappointing.
UKIP, what a disappointment. The thing is, they're irrelevant now. The only way that they can still continue to be relevant is if they go harder to the right. And they have to talk about the Islamic issue. They basically need to become an anti-Islamic party, and they need to get on the Trump train, because Paul Nuttall criticized Trump for, you know, grabbing pussy and things like this. They need to get on the Trump train.
10 years old. 10 years old. Criticizing someone for something they said 10 years ago.
They need to support Trump's Islamic immigration ban, and they need to get on that train, and then they'll get the headlines. I mean, it's just, I don't understand it, because for me, it's just basic, obvious politics. This is what Trump did. He comes out, he says something outrageous, right? And then all the press are on him and he gets all the publicity. That's all that Paul Nuttall has to do. All he has to do is come out and say, UKIP supports Donald Trump's Islamic ban. And then all of a sudden he'll get all the press coverage in the nation talking about him. And Paul Nuttall will be famous and UKIP will be famous and they'll be able to do something. But he doesn't do it. He's just politically retarded. It's just really frustrating. I know there are 17 million people that voted for Brexit, and those votes are up for grabs, and UKIP's the only one that can grab them and really get into power and really change the country. Unfortunately, Nigel Farage has just wimped out. He's got like 5 steps away from the finishing line and then decided to quit, and now this guy Paul Nuttall, he's just faffing around. So yeah, there you go.
Nigel's busy making podcasts now.
Yeah, he's making far podcasts. More important.
I think UKIP, what they really need to do is, I mean, they could keep their name, but they need to push towards patriotism. I think they need to say, right, we've got Brexit now, and now we want to campaign for Britain and putting Britain first, in the same way that Donald Trump has campaigned for putting America first. And I was thinking they could still keep the name, but call themselves UK Independent Patriots, because we want Britain to be independent, and we want it to be an independent patriotic nation, and capitalise on that. They want to stay as civic nationalists, that's fine, but they should push that civic nationalism, they should push those civic nationalist policies and call themselves United Kingdom Independent Patriots. Because all the while they're still calling themselves United Kingdom Independence Party, well, we've already voted to leave the European Union. So what's the point of that name now? What is it that they are? Yeah. What are their policies? As you say, we've got 17 million people that voted for nationalism, whether that was ethnic nationalism or civic nationalism, it was still nationalism. And they want a party that is going to do the best for the nation. And even if you're not white British, a nationalist party in Britain is going to make Britain better. So it would be even better for them. All the while we've got more and more immigrants pouring into the country.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't just affect white people. It also affects the immigrants that are already here. So it's in the immigrants that are already here's best interest to have a nationalist party. But they won't think that. It's no good going to them for the vote. What UKIP really need to be doing is as you say, moving further towards the right. Paul Nuttall, I was very disappointed. And when I've seen him, he doesn't really have the presence that you need for somebody who's leading a party. He seems to cave in to the media when he should really be standing his ground. I mean, the guy had to leave his home. He was getting so many threats. And he should have capitalised on that. The media were saying, well, he didn't even live in the area. Well, he couldn't live in the area because his home was being attacked. His life was being threatened. So he had to leave his home. And he should have made more of a point of that. And he should also have kept an eye on his website, because the main attack they had against him was that, according to his blog, he had friends that died during the Hillsborough tragedy. And he said that wasn't true. But he should have just left it at that. Instead of apologising and making a big song and dance about it, he should have just said, well, I didn't write that. Somebody else wrote that. Yeah, somebody else manages my blog.
Yeah, whatever, mate. I didn't write that. Move on.
Yeah.
I mean, really, to be honest with you, there's only one issue that you need to talk about in this country if you want to get elected as a populist party, and that is Pakistani rape gangs. That's all you got to talk about. Every single interview, every single speech, every single rally, you just talk about Pakistani rape gangs over and over and over again. Because it's one thing which everybody in this country is utterly, utterly disgusted about, and but nobody's got the balls to talk about it. So that's it. You don't have to talk about the Jewish question. You don't have to talk about a white genocide. You don't have to talk about any of the stuff that we talk about. All you have to do is press that button, and you will have an avalanche of people ready to vote for you. It's quite simple. It's just, anyway, for me, it's just absolutely blindingly obvious. And it's really frustrating to see these people fumbling around and not doing it. But I guess the thing is, if you're the kind of guy who, does talk about Pakistani rape gangs, then you're the kind of guy who will get involved in the anti-jihad movement, and then you won't make it into UKIP in the first place. So what you end up with these big political parties, you always end up with people who are just cuckolded from the beginning. So, yeah, that's the problem, really.
Yeah, he shies clear of mentioning that. It was mentioned this morning, actually. There was a BBC politics.
It's pathetic. It's program. Just pathetic.
They had a debate. They had, I forget his name. He is right wing, but he's also very pro Jewish. And he was debating somebody from Sweden, obviously because of Trump's comments last week that he said about Sweden and the problems that Sweden are having there. And he brought up the fact that we have had 1,400 white girls raped in Rotherham, and the same thing is happening in Sweden, and exactly the same has happened over here, where the council and the authorities and the social services, they all covered it up, they all denied it, and exactly the same thing is happening in Sweden. It's all being covered up, and they're denying it, and the Swedish politician was there, denying it. And then he messed it all up by talking about how in Malmo, Jews have been the victims of anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism has gone up in Malmo. That is the least of the problems that Malmo has, is people criticising Jews. You've got bombs going off there, you've got people being shot, you've got terrorism, you've got no-go areas. And instead of bringing all that up, this guy says, the Jews are being criticised. Poor old Jews. I forget his name, but he's quite often on there. Yeah, it was.
I don't understand. I mean, it's just disgusting, isn't it? I don't know what to say.
How can they say that someone sending a tweet is the equivalent of girls being raped by Pakistani
gangs? I did a whole bit. I'm actually really, really angry about it. I did two videos about it this week, about the whole Swedish situation. I managed to find a video which made me absolutely furious, by some Muslim, I just can't even believe this. Some Muslim scumbag, live streamed, a gang rape in Sweden. So that was nice. I found that video, stuck that on my YouTube channel. I mean, it's just the situation in Sweden is just so utterly, utterly infuriating. I think it really stabs it in the heart especially for white nationalists, because, you know, the Swedish are the original. Well, they're not the original, but they are a particularly whitest, refined very, very breed white. Of white people. They're very white.
They are the blonde whitest hair, with blue the blonde eyes. Hair, blue eyes. So they epitomize the furthest extreme you can get from the jet black.
Well, I'm tempted to say that, but then you've got the redheads. The redheads are very white as well. So, but that's more of a Scottish, perhaps Celtic kind of white. But anyway. In general, to see the Swedes, to see the Scandinavians just utterly cuckolded and just being invaded by this scum is just awful. I made a video about it. There are two names that we need to remember. One is the Bonnier family. That's the major Jewish family in Sweden, and they control.
Then they control the media.
Yeah, they control the media. Yeah. They also control a large section of the media in Finland. And the other guy is a Jew called David Schwartz. David Schwartz was a Jew who came from Poland. Apparently, he managed to escape four or five concentration camps.
Oh, they've all done that. Escape yeah. from the oven.
He was really traumatized. And anyway, he was the intellectual who pushed the immigration issue. And basically, he's the father of multiculturalism in Sweden. So there are a whole bunch of other names in my video. I think I've got too many names in there, really, to be honest, because nobody's ever going to remember all these names unless you're Swedish. But the Bonnier family and David Schwartz, they are they're the ones to blame, basically.
Yeah, it's best to concentrate on one name, one subject, and then people can remember that and they can repeat it to people. But Finland's doing very well at the moment. They've got their Suomi Maidan protest, which has gone on for longer than a week now. They were all out there that calling for people to bring tents and they set tents up. They set
cold.
With a flue pipe. Yeah, in the snow. I think it's been going for about 10 days now. The police arrested one of the heads of the group and then they just set up again. Once the police took everything down, they just built it all up again. They were live streaming it. I believe it's still going on now. It started off with these refugees that were having a protest because they didn't want to leave. Right. So the nationalists formed this counter protest basically, and said that we'll stay here until you are removed from the country, basically. So they're there and it's open to all nationalists.
So they're using the Arab Spring. What was that square called in Egypt? No.
It's Ukraine, Maidan. They're calling it Suomi Maidan because it was the Maidan Revolution, which was in the Ukraine. Finland has a good relationship with Ukraine. And obviously, they're a little bit more anti-communism, anti-Russia than we are over here in the West. The Finland was like in between the West and the East. So they have this closer ties to the Ukraine than we do here. It's the same in the Baltics. There's a lot of support there for the Ukraine and the Ukraine revolution. I mean, we know that they're probably worse. Well, they are worse off now than they were when they were under Russia. But they had a lot of issues with the Soviet Union, with the Holodomor, and that sort of carried over until now. It's going to take decades to get over what was actually done to the Ukraine. So this is why they are against Russia. And they also see America as being right over the other side of the planet. Okay, America has helped them, but they don't think America is going to be able to interfere that much with their government because it's over the other side of the world, whereas Russia is right on their doorstep when the government was more allied with Russia. So that seems to be the mentality of the people in Ukraine, but obviously the Porky Poroshenko, he's just as bad as the one that they had before. But the fact that they had their revolution and managed to get rid of their previous government, that has inspired nationalists in the Baltic countries, in Finland, in the countries that were occupied by Soviet Russia, basically. So that's why they're calling it Euromaidan. They'd like to rise up and get rid of the Finland government. I mean, the Finland government.
The Ukrainian revolution was basically a Jewish-led revolution.
Yeah, it was funded by America.
Union plot to just get rid of the prime minister and put a pro-European Union Jewish president in.
Yeah, but what they see it as is that they got rid of Russia and America is over the other side of the world and they would rather be joining Europe. This is the way the Ukrainians see it. Even though they would rather have American Jews running things than Russian Jews running things is the way they look at it. But I was just going to say the Finnish government, although the Finns might complain about the Finnish government, they have the happiest children in the whole of Europe over there. They don't start going to school until they're 7 years old, and they do have a very high level of education. So the Finnish government isn't as bad as.
But it takes them like 10 years to learn how to drive. I know a guy from Finland. The stuff they have to do to learn how to drive is insane. They have to do like, skidding on ice and all this kind of. It's really complex. But it takes them a long time to learn how to drive. I know that much.
Yeah, you're trained to put on the ice chains in the snow, in the ice. But yeah, they're still out there. They're still protesting. They won't have it until these refugees go back. I mean, what business do Negroes have in the northern Icelands like Sweden and Finland? What business?
Yeah, I don't even
understand.
I met a guy the other day in my hometown, and he's got a wolf. It's a breed of wolf. You know, it's his pet dog. You know, and he's walking, and I'm talking to him about his dog, and he was just telling me he's got this dog, and he's saying, "Oh, my wolf. He loves it when it's cold." And when it's windy and when it's rainy, and he loves it. He just feels it like freshly invigorated, and he's just running around, and he loves the cold air, you know? And it just reminded me what David Duke said in, I can't remember which book it was, but anyway, one of his books that I read, where he's talking about, white people generally, when it's cold, we feel like fresh and invigorated. We feel like, oh, it's a nice. I mean, we do like the heat. We have a natural inclination towards the heat because obviously if it gets too cold, we die. But there's something about cold air which freshens us up. But black people, on the other hand, they just turn all sluggish when it's cold. But you take a white person and you put us in the heat, you know, like when we went to India and you're with the British Empire and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, and I've lived in India for years in the heat, and oh my God almighty, it's tough. It's really, really tough. The heat is tough. But for black people, I mean, I guess they're okay with the heat, you know? So why do these black people want to go and live in one of the coldest places on the planet? It just defies belief, doesn't it, really?
No, it's not because they're bringing anything. It's not because they want to increase the wealth of the country, is it? It's because they want to take from the wealth of the country.
Yeah.
When they say we want people that come over that share our values, how can a Negro share the same values as a white man? How? It's impossible. They have completely different values. They're a completely different subspecies to the white man. There's no evidence whatsoever that Negroes have ever shared the same values as white people. Just look at their history. Just look at the history of Africa. Is that in any way similar to the history of Europe? Have they ever come up with a system of law? Ever come up with a system of government? Ever come up with an alphabet, even a system of writing? They've never come up with anything similar to what white people have come up with, and yet our politicians tell us that these people share our values, and if they share our values,
they can
come over.
Yeah, but Sven, you forget. They was Kangs, man. They was Kangs.
Well, I saw something funny to do with that. Again, the other day, I was watching a BBC travel program, and they were in the Sudan, and they were looking at the pyramids in the Sudan from millennia ago. They're obviously built by white people. And this tour guide was going, oh, yes, it was the black pharaohs that built these, the black pharaohs.
Yeah, black pharaohs.
No challenging of it whatsoever. This is what's taught to the children now, that the pharaohs were black. Egypt was black. Incredible.
Yeah. Well, what to do. Yeah.
Anyway, shall we move on to some of the other subjects that we wanted to discuss this week?
Faggotgate. Milogate.
Milo. Yes.
Yeah. So Milo has, he's been crucified by the press, and the press are trying to say that he's a paedophile. And I made a video about this. And basically the point is Milo is not a paedophile. Milo is just a faggot. He's gay, and all gay men like to have sex with, or they fantasize about having sex with, young teenage boys, 13-year-old boys, 14-year-old boys. And I find this to be really, really interesting, because knowing Milo Yiannopoulos and his flamboyant nature and his intellectually aggressive nature, his provocative nature, I mean, he has apologized, but I think he's going to fight back sooner or later. And so now we're in a situation now that we may have a famous gay political personality who's just going to come out and say, well, no, I'm sorry, but it's ordinary for gay men to have sex with 13-year-old boys, and there's nothing with it. Because I don't see, the way I see it, Milo is backed into a corner. I mean, he doesn't want to be labeled as a paedophile. Nobody wants that label. It's like the most demoniac thing in the world. It's like one of the few, sexual taboos that haven't been broken, possibly the only one. So if he doesn't want that label, he's going to have to defend his statements. He's going to have to point out that gay men in general are attracted to 13 or 14-year-old boys. And he's going to try and put a positive spin on it. And now, obviously, I don't, I'm not in favor of that, but it's good for us because we can now reveal to the normies, to the people on the moderate right and so on, that, you know, homosexuality is fundamentally an aggressive sexuality. It's a predatory sexuality. And these men like to prey on young boys. It's Milo is pulling back the curtain, so to speak, and he's showing what faggotry really is. So it's, so yeah, I want to, push that hashtag, push that trend, that buzzword, Milo Gate, and throw as much fuel in the fire as I possibly can. And I recently did a video. I haven't uploaded it yet. I think I'm going to put it on after this. But, one of the subscribers to my channel, he sent me, a link. And apparently Stephen Fry, who is Jewish, by the way, he wrote a play called, what was it called? God damn it. Tobacco and, what the hell was it called? Latin Tobacco and Boys. And he wrote this play when he was in university. And it's about a sexual relationship between a teacher and a 13-year-old boy. So it's, and he's celebrating it. So it, here's another example. There's a famous, homosexual, and he's made this comment about sex with young teenage boys. There's the Star Trek dude as well. The guy who was in the original Star Trek, the Chinese one, he's a fag.
George Takei.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. He's also made comments about sex with young boys. So the way I feel it, this is almost like another Pizzagate. I'm sure that many, 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 many of these famous faggots have got the comments floating around on the internet somewhere. And all we have to do is we have to find those comments, put them under the Milo Gate hashtag, the Milo Gate, you know, buzzword, and just throw it like fuel into the fire and just watch the whole thing explode.
Well, I think he's already been defending it, hasn't he? Because he was defending it at the time in the interview. He was saying that it's fine for an older man to have sex. I put that in quotes, have sex with a 13-year-old, because a 13-year-old can't have sex. A 13-year-old cannot give their consent to having sex. It's and that goes back to years ago where your parents would have to give the girl away in marriage. It was your parents that could give away the consent of a young girl to have sex. Children cannot consent to sex. Underage is rape. It's always rape because it's impossible for them to give consent. They're not developed enough to be able to give consent. And I think the desire among the homosexuals to rape 13-year-olds is all about taking away innocence. It's all about corrupting innocence for them and damaging that child so that that child then grows up to be a homosexual. And this is the thing that really gets me, is instead of protecting children from pedophiles and protecting them from turning into homosexuals, we're told we should be celebrating the results of what the pedophile has done. We're told we should be celebrating homosexuals and when people come out on the television, sports stars, actors, and say, I'm a sodomite, I take it up the arse, isn't that wonderful, pat me on the back. We're all supposed to cheer at that. And yet what they're basically saying is, I was raped when I was a child. That's what they're saying when they come out and say that they're homosexual. That's what it really means. In 90% of the cases, it meant they were raped as a child. And we can see that here with Milo, because that's what he was saying. That's what was done to him. So he was raped when he was a child. And his way of dealing with that has been to become an adult homosexual. And he wants to normalize that, because he's so damaged that he thinks that that's normal after having that done to him when he was a child. So he's already making excuses for it. And again, it's another part of homosexuality that they don't want the general public to learn about. They don't want us to know about that, the same as they don't want us to know about the high suicide rate, the low age that they die at, the incredible amount of disease that's rife among the homosexuals, the amount of depression that there is, besides the actual absolutely foul mechanics of their sexual act, which really isn't a sexual act. It's all about dominance and dominating someone. You imagine a poor child that's had that done to them, and yet by promoting homosexuality and saying that homosexuality is fine, that's what people are acquiescing to. That's what people are saying and are condoning is pedophilia. It's older men raping children. And when people say they support homosexuality, that's what they are supporting. That is an essential part of the homosexual life cycle. That's the only way they can reproduce themselves. They cannot produce by having sex with a woman and producing a child. That's not going to produce a homosexual. The only way they can produce a homosexual is by raping a child. Mm-hmm. And that is the only way. There's, I think it's about nine-tenths of them. That's how come they ended up being homosexual, and the rest of them, a very small percentage, are born hermaphroditic or with problems with their hormones, or again, there was some other form of abuse in one parent or another that can cause it, but very, very rarely. About 9 out of 10 are like it because they were abused as children. And I've heard this from the horse's mouth. You know, this comes from homosexuals saying this, and this has just been confirmed by Milo in that interview, and he obviously thinks that that's perfectly fine. So he's going to defend it, Subal, and you're correct. I think this is going to be good for us because it is going to highlight that part of the homosexual life cycle to all the people that had never thought about that before.
Yeah, I mean, most people like to think of, when they think of homosexuals, they think of consenting adults, isn't it? You know, that's the way it's presented on the TV. But obviously the question is, where do these people come from in the first place? It's basically a very parasitical kind of weird sex cult, to be honest with you. It's a cycle of abuse that starts when you're young and then just recreates itself and then just creates havoc in society. And the only real way to get rid of it and to stamp it out is to make it illegal, basically, and just... And, you know, I'm actually quite a libertarian guy. I mean, I've said this before on podcasts. Like, I don't mind, for example, like, I'm quite relaxed on the marijuana issue. I don't mind if people want to take drugs. I don't mind if people want to listen to rock music. I'm quite, I'm not a fanatical Puritan. I'm quite sympathetic towards mixed race people because I see them as victims. And we've talked about that at length in the past. But the thing about, I mean, obviously, no, I mean, let me have to make it clear. I do want a white ethno state, but I don't see many of those people as being, evil or bad, so to speak. I see them as being, victims, and, we can deal with them later, but after we defeated the Jews and everybody else. But as far as fags are concerned, you're making a choice to, engage in this sexually deviant behavior. I'm saying this because there are a lot of, people in white nationalism that seem to think we have to accept homosexuals into the movement. But these guys have made a choice. Maybe you were abused when you were a young boy, but you're still, choosing to act on that bad desire or that bad, thing that happened to you when you were young. You're still choosing to engage in sexually perverse activities with other men. And to continue that cycle of perversion. So it is a choice. I mean, maybe some people were abused when they were young, and that's very sad. I mean, I absolutely sympathize. I mean, I sympathize with Milo in a way. It must be terrible for that to have happened to him when he was 13, but he's chose to continue that cycle of abuse and to promote it. So he's made a moral choice. You make a moral choice to be a homosexual. It's not something you're born with. Like if your dad married an Indian and you're born as a flipping half caste, there's not much you can do about it. It's in your blood, right? That's why I sympathize with those people to a certain extent. But if you choose, to go out and have sex with other men, you're making a choice to do that. It's a moral choice. And, it's something which really has to be, yeah, stamped out, and it's disgusting. And yeah, I think Milo Gate may do this. And I also want to add, we may even really manage to push this through, because we've got Pence is the vice president now in America. And as far as I understand it, he's pretty anti-gay. I mean, as far as I understand it, he was in favor of using electrotherapy to cure gays and things like that. And the whole evangelical base, which supports Trump, you know, his white base, they're all anti-gay as well. So if we push this thing through, I mean, maybe you could even reverse the gay marriage thing. Maybe they could even clamp down on the gay pride marches. And, yeah, I think the alt-right should be an anti-faggot movement, basically.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's all about nationalism, and nationalism is about natural law, and there's no room for sodomy in natural law. That's the reversal of natural law. And when you're talking about they're making a choice to do that, what they're saying is that they have no self-control. They have no self-control. They can't control themselves. They just have to bugger one another. They just have to bugger little children. That's no nonsense. They have self-control. Everybody else has self-control. You learn to have self-control. Milo made a decision that he would not learn to have self-control, and he would just give in to his instincts, and his instincts had been warped by that abuse when he was a child. But he made the choice to go along with that rather than to reject that and do all that he could to not be homosexual. And I believe what Mike Pence promotes is treatment, whether it's electroshock treatment or whether it's some other form of treatment that they have. They used to be very successful with this treatment, and there were a lot of evangelical Christian groups that helped a lot of people and basically turned them straight again. And this is another thing that the media, they will say, oh, it's impossible to turn a homosexual straight. It's impossible. And this is abuse of homosexuals. But they seem to be quite happy when somebody who's been straight all their life turns into a homosexual. They want to celebrate that, don't they? All the time we hear of these people that you thought were straight all their time, and suddenly they come out as a homosexual. And the media doesn't say, well, this is an abuse of straight people. This is a torture of straight people, turning them into homosexuals. And yet that's what they say about homosexuals that want to be heterosexuals and that go for treatment to become heterosexuals. They say that that's some kind of mistreatment. That's some kind of torture of homosexuals to give them the hope of actually meeting someone of the opposite sex and producing children with them. I think a lot. Go on.
No, yeah, I think, I mean, I said this in the last podcast. I know I've met two gay men in my life who have never had sex with a woman. I mean, can you believe it? They're like, both of these guys, they're in their 20s and they never had sex with a woman ever. I mean, and I remember I had a long conversation with this gay dude. I was like, you know, maybe you want to try it, mate, you know, the vagina, you know, it's like, you're sticking it in the wrong hole. Like maybe you'll like it. Anyway, whatever.
It's the easiness of it, isn't it? Getting sex is a lot more easy when you're a homosexual. You're supposed to just give it to any other homosexual that wants it. This is why they have so many different partners. So they're not used to, if say you're courting a young lady, going on dates and buying her presents and all the sort of things that go on before you end up sleeping with, none of that applies with homosexuality. You just go with whoever you want to go with. And
it's also kind of similar to masturbation, I suppose, in a way. Well, yeah. I mean, there's a huge problem with that.
Well, that's what it is, isn't it?
In white culture, because a lot of men, they just sit at home and watch porno and jack off, and they don't go out and get themselves girlfriends. And it's really psychologically damaging.
Well, that's what it is. That's what they're doing is masturbation. They're masturbating into each other's anuses. That's what they're doing. It's not sex. It's an insult to call it sex. It really is. The same as it's an insult to call it gay marriage. The marriage act is the sex act which can produce children. That's the consummation of the marriage. So when they said, oh, equal marriage, gay marriage, that means the same thing as marriage, that's what they're saying. Sodomy is the equivalent.
There's also a news story about bringing up the marriage point, but there was a news story last week about civic partnerships, and there was a heterosexual couple, and they wanted to get, you know, they were like, well, we don't want to get married, we want a civic partnership. And I was reading Peter Hitchens today, and he was talking about it. He's basically, I like Hitchens, actually. He's got a lot of, he says a lot of smart things, but it's kind of, they're basically undermining the marriage contract, because if you get civic partnerships legalized for heterosexual couples instead of marriages, then people will just have civic partnerships instead of marriage. And then, you know, marriage just gets destroyed. And that's obviously the Jewish plan, the communist plan.
Well, the guy that was calling for that to be allowed to have a civic partnership with his wife, he looked very Jewish to me. And,
right.
And the one, his common law wife, I mean, she was obviously a feminist, total feminist.
That must be a coincidence.
Yeah, just a coincidence, of course, that we've got Jews involved in that and feminists involved in that. I don't know if we've got enough time to go into the other subject we were going to go into.
The comics. I was thinking, yeah. I mean, we could tie it in by saying, isn't it interesting that when you look at popular culture and you look at the bad guys, they are all, this is something which is, I've noticed for a long time, actually, they are all asexual. Like, let's take Darth Vader, completely non-sexual. He has no sexuality at all. Voldemort, completely non-sexual. I don't know. I've run out of examples already. But there generally seems to be a complete lack of sexualities in these kind of archetypal type super evil characters, you know, which is actually completely wrong, because I think the real evil ones are the sexual perverts. But of course the mass media is not going to tell you that. I mean, if you want to see someone that's really, really evil, if you want to stare into the face of evil, then go and look at that. I used her clip in one of my videos. She's that
Betty
woman
Friedan.
that's in that band that plays in the comic Ping Pong, and she's got that pink marks in her mask on her face, and she says we all have our preferences. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, you look at that. Oh, I mean, it's just like, oh, somebody, it's evil. It's just utterly foul and disgusting. That's the real face of evil. Not these kind of asexual, almost like drone type, you know, Voldemort or Darth Vader type personalities. But of course, popular culture won't show that to you, will it?
Well, I think also with the early comics and the early science fiction, especially on television, things like Doctor Who, stuff like that, they never really, there was nothing sexual in it whatsoever. And especially with Doctor Who, I mean, he always had a female assistant, but there was never any sexual tension or any hint of anything sexual there until the new Doctor Who, where he kissed his assistant. Which,
oh, did he?
Seemed to me, I mean, that was totally the opposite of everything that Doctor Who was about. And this was a program that appealed to children, and it appealed to adults. And by appealing to children, it shouldn't have anything to do with that in it. Children aren't capable of processing that because they're innocent. Again, this goes back to this homosexual desire and the pedophile desire to take away innocence.
Hang on. He kissed his assistant.
Yes.
His assistant, a girl or a boy?
A girl.
Oh, okay.
I didn't watch it. I didn't watch the new Doctor Who. But
I don't watch it either. I used to watch the old one when I was a kid. But one thing that annoys me, sorry, I'm just moving because my leg's gone dead. One thing that annoys me about Doctor Who is, and Sherlock Holmes, is they've turned them both into these like action hero type characters. And they were actually, in the beginning, they were very kind of traditional. It was a very British type of hero. You know, they were both older men. Sherlock Holmes was a man in his 40s. And Doctor Who was a man in his 40s or his 50s or older. They were older male heroes.
That you could look
but
up to.
But to cater to modern Americanized and popularized tastes, now we have to turn them into these action hero types. It's just not British. I'm sorry.
Politically correct action hero types as well. They have to be politically correct now. Whereas before, the older people that you could look up to, that you would feel safe around. If they're kissing their assistant, that you're not going to be feeling safe around them, are you? Well, what goes on in that TARDIS if he's, when the cameras aren't there, if he's kissing his assistant? It introduces all sorts of things to children's minds that have no place in really being there.
Yeah. Why kids aren't innocent anymore. I mean, I talked to a few kids the other day. The boogeyman these days is flipping Jimmy Savile. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't know anything about that kind of thing.
That's a real boogeyman, isn't it? I mean, it's years a real ago. Boogeyman.
I mean, that's what they years joke ago. About. It's like Jimmy Savile will get you. Ha, ha, ha. You know, I mean, the kids just joke. Well,
years ago, it used to be an imaginary evil because the children, the fact that there was this evil in the world was kept from them. You wanted them to have the most enjoyable childhood as they possibly could have, the most innocent and enjoyable childhood. And if you want your children to have that, then you keep the fact that there is real evil away from them, if you can. So the fact that they're now talking about Jimmy Savile being the boogeyman is horrific, really, because it means that they know that that's out there and that could happen. And that did happen. And that's a real shocking indictment of the times that we live in.
Well, they have to tell kids now, like, things. They tell them this in school. They tell children, like, you know, this is your private parts, and if somebody touches your private parts, it's bad, and you have to tell an adult. I mean, they've got to tell kids all this stuff now. And it's kind of like it's such a slippery thing, because they're doing it in a way which is meant to protect children, so you kind of can't argue against it. But at the same time, because they're putting this thought out there, all of a sudden it's like that there's this weird elephant in the room now, you know, where people are just thinking about pedophiles all the time. It's like this freaking energy is in the back of your head. Like before, I remember when I was a kid, when I was a young teenager, I mean, you could walk past a school and you could see the kids playing at playtime and you could stand there and watch them. You know, it's fun watching kids play. I mean, kids are funny, right? The way they run around and they scream and they joke and climb over each other. But you can't do that these days. If you stood outside a school and watched the children play, you'd get arrested. You know, it's like there's almost this, and that's what the media has done. It's put this question in people's minds now. You can't even talk to a child anymore without some kind of weird flipping sexual innuendo being there. It's just awful, really.
Well, they teach them the mechanics of gay sex to under 10-year-olds now in schools, and yet the teachers themselves, they're not allowed to touch the kids. If the kid falls over, grazes his knee, needs a hug, they're not allowed to do that. And there's just been a report that was released last week that was saying that this is tantamount to child abuse. In fact, this is actually child abuse, and it will retard a child's emotional growth by the teachers not being allowed to touch them, because the teacher is playing the role of the parent. All the while the child is at the school, the teacher is playing that role. And if the child can't be touched by the parents, you imagine the damage that would do. And this
they're not allowed to touch them at all?
No, they're not allowed to touch them. Not allowed to hug them. Not allowed to touch the child at all. So if the child falls over, or the child's been bullied, or the child just needs some human contact because they're missing their parents. Teachers aren't allowed to touch them.
A little hug. Can't even give them a hug anymore, can you? That's what we've created, a society. You can't even hug children.
You can teach them about gay sex, though. That's more important. That's more important. We mustn't ostracize these homosexuals, these pedophiles, these transsexuals. We must teach them all about that as young as possible. We're creating a better world like that, Subar. It's a better world. Progress. Progress. We're almost at the utopia now. Can't you see it? It's all around us.
It's the beige utopia. It's coming.
Multicultural utopia. It's almost here.
Well, Islam is coming, basically, isn't it? That's the conclusion of feminism and all this weird sexuality. It's, you push so far into the left wing, you push so far into chaos, that the right wing has to strike back. I mean, order must be restored. And unless we restore it, another force will come in and restore it for us. That's nature. It's like they say, nature abhors a vacuum in the same way religion abhors a vacuum. And right now, Western society, there's just a complete vacuum. That's why the Muslims are pouring in, and they will restore order. It's just, unfortunately, when they do restore order, they will, you know, at the same time, they'll annihilate the white race through miscegenation. But that's the basic truth. That's why the end conclusion of feminism is Islam. You know, first wave of feminism is the suffragettes. You want to get the vote. Second wave of feminism is your Betty Friedan. We want, women want to be in the workplace. They want to get the career. Third stage of feminism is your, Naomi Wolf and the, I can't remember what book she made. The third wave of feminism is all about lesbianism and fat acceptance and all just absolute madness. And fourth wave of feminism is Islam. Put on your burqa. And the feminists are doing this already. And the rest of society will just follow. Unless the white man, the Aryan man, unless he reimposes his own ideology, his own religion, his own moral code to restore order. Order will have to be restored. Nature will strike back. Perversion cannot continue. A perversion is just a reaction and a rebellion against the natural order of things. It cannot last. It will snap back. And unless we snap it back ourselves, Islam will do it for us, basically, in my opinion.
The pendulum is swinging back the other way right now.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is a huge weight on that pendulum that's helping us swing back through. But we will swing back through and we will break it all down and smash it all and return it back to how it should be. I think this is what's happening now. This is what's happening in East Europe. This is what's happening in America. The tide has turned. That pendulum is swinging back the other way. I don't think our countries are going to end up being Islamified. I don't think that's possible. I think we are going to see a revolt against this, and we're just in the first stages of it now. Because it can only get it, like you say, it does have to go back to normal again. And at the moment, it's only just turned slightly back. It's like a ship that's going to take ages to turn, and it's just slightly turning back round to where it should be right now. But it's going to pick up pace. It's obviously going to pick up.
Sorry, I'm not trying to sound pessimistic. The fire is definitely burning and rising. And the other thing that happened this week, alt-right news, is PewDiePie. PewDiePie is a Nazi. I thought he cucked out a little bit when he made his apology, but he's done another video, and he put the Daily Stormer on his video, and he's exposed that whole thing, because one of those Wall Street Journal journalists that did him and called him a racist, he's made his own racist comments on Twitter like 9 years ago or whatever. So they've pulled that out and they're splashing that out. So, and PewDiePie is the guy's got 52 million subscribers. I mean, every single video he does gets 2 or 3 million views, or probably more. And he's basically, I don't think he's a Nazi, but he's a troll. And he realizes that if you talk about Hitler, it pisses people off. And when you tell him to stop doing it, he's just like, no, I think I'll just keep doing it just because it pisses you off. And the whole flipping, the whole internet's copying him, and the whole internet's defending him. Even Stefan Molyneux came out and wrote a video about it defending him. Even, Black Pigeon Speaks. So we now have an entire generation of people who are just, they may not be white nationalists, but they're basically coming out and saying, yeah, we want to make fun of the Jews, and we want to make fun of the Holocaust, and we want to make fun of the Hitler. And no, you're not going to stop us doing it because we don't like political correctness. So screw you. And I say, it's utterly glorious. I mean, from the Jews' perspective, I don't know how they're going to shut this down. Because what the Jews have done is they've created a culture that is utterly nihilistic. They've created a culture with no values at all. But people, young kids, teenagers, they're not taught to value anything. They're utterly nihilistic. And so when you've got a group of people that are utterly nihilistic and you tell them that they have to respect the Holocaust, they're like, well, why should we?
Yeah.
So it's
wonderful news. It's another gift. I think PewDiePie is another gift.
It's like glorious. Trump was.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a good point to end on. A nice positive point to end the podcast on, I think, Subal.
Well, if we're ending the podcast, I promise you, we won't talk about faggots next week. Next week, we'll talk about comics or something.
Okay. All right.
The Sven and Subal fag bashing podcast.
Fag bashing show. Thank you very much for coming on, Sue Bowl. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, on Radio Aryan. Don't miss it. We hope you have a wonderful week.
To the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.